Hi, folks. Welcome back to On Call with Insignia, where we go on call with leaders innovating the future of Southeast Asia's internet and digital economy, or as we like to call it, ASEAN Innovation. I'm your host, Paolo Aquino. And we're back with another episode, another call with a leader in one of our portfolio, in one of Insignia Ventures portfolio companies, none other than Frank Ng, who is the head of marketing at Intellect, Asia's leading mental health care company. And, you know, we've been privileged to partner with Intellect from, you know, very early on, I'd say like since day one, and actually see how Intellect has grown from consumer app to become one of the go-to platforms for a lot of businesses to actually integrate mental health care services more proactively for their employees. And to our longtime listeners, you may be familiar with Intellect, having had Theo, the CEO and founder, on the show, I think, three or four times now. So I thought of maybe Theo can take a break, and then we can get to know the other leaders who are behind Intellect's really rapid growth over the past few years and get to know their own perspective on the company. And so we have here Frank on the show. So Frank, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Paolo. Great to be here. And of course, really appreciate you and Insignia's confidence in Intellect since our early stages of growth.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to have Frank in particular here on the show, because not only is he head of marketing, but he's also actually a pretty active thought leader. If you get to follow his LinkedIn, you'll see a lot of different posts, not just about Intellect, but about, you know, marketing as well. Some useful stuff for marketers out there. And he also is a digital marketing instructor, and so does a lot of these courses and sessions for other marketers in the industry. And he's had quite the career, having worked at the likes of Skyscanner as a growth executive, Uber as well with performance marketing, and several other companies. So really a lot of different experiences. And now he's an Intellect. And so I wanted to start off with that. Like, why did you decide to join Intellect? What did Theo tell you? Or what were maybe like the external factors that led you to decide to join this company?
So I think I've been with Intellect, we're getting to 15 months now. So have had a good run and then hopefully a lot longer of the business. And I think I first transferred Intellect, this was probably back still in the pandemic. I was working then in e-commerce, selling really well-known but traditional brands like Dettol, Durex, Enfagrow and the like regionally. And I was, I guess, at that point, looking for something that is a new challenge, right? So I've kind of worked in MNCs before or large scale-ups like Skyscanner and Uber, but never really had a chance to, you know, do that 0-to-1 kind of piece. Usually I look at 10-to-100 or something like that. So 0-to-1, 1-to-10, whichever, you know, people define us. I think that was where I was kind of looking to get my hands dirty in a little, right? As you pointed out, I've been an instructor for quite a long time, and it was still kind of a growth advisor to a number of startups, but not actually like join or dug in the trenches just yet. So having had the chance to advise and grow a number of startups from a third party view, I thought, you know, why don't I actually get my chance to do it? And when I was looking for startups that fit that profile, transform Intellect, and of course the mission to democratize and destigmatize mental health for the region, which I thought couldn't be a better one, right? And being in, you know, large businesses that do have access to mental resources, but that are not discussed or even, I think, shared at all in the company, I thought like, oh yeah, that's a bit of a difference in perception, right? Where we do have it, but no one talks about it. So how do I look at a new business model and join one that actually brings that to light?
And what was your first day like, or first week, first few days like when you joined the company? I guess you mentioned you had not really gone into, I would say, like, quote unquote, early stage kind of companies before. So was there kind of like whiplash when you joined, or what was the feeling like?
I can see why there might usually be, but in this case, I didn't feel that way. Though I do have a bit of a funny story where, so of course, my previous business, typical shining MNC headquarters, 30 plus stories of MBFC, the Marina Bay Financial Center, but those not in Singapore. And I have, naturally, like most startups, we have moved since, but we used to be in a shop house, right, in Singapore, a very common kind of starting ground. And typical first day, you know, you want to be early, you want to be punctual. So 9 a.m., I'm there on the doorstep. And it turns out no one was opening the door for me because Theo was already in the call and people usually screaming afterwards. So I was like, hey, hang on, did I go to the right shop house? Did I get caught out of this? But no, obviously like 10 minutes later, someone opened the door and that's kind of how my first day was. But I remember that first 10 minutes, I was like, oh, did I show up the wrong place? Like, what happened? So that was a bit of a funny story. I think after that, pretty much things progressed pretty well. It was more so less so of the startup piece, but more so of the team piece, where the marketing team itself wasn't in place before I joined. So I think that was pretty much what the first week was about, kind of thinking like how that structure should look like moving forward.
Actually, yeah, that's an interesting point. And we'll get back to that, how you put that team together and how you really quote-unquote institutionalized sort of marketing within Intellect. So you've been in Intellect, you've said 15 months now, and certainly a lot has happened with Intellect over the past few months, since I last, you know, spoke to Theo and we've had him on the show. So maybe you can share from the marketing perspective, you know, what has been the project or initiative or maybe even change that you've done in your role that you've been most excited about, and maybe share how it has impacted Intellect's business.
I think if we look at a project, maybe I'll just use the Mendel Festival we held last year, 2022. So quite nicely, actually, this was the second iteration that I was grateful to inherit from the previous team. As I mentioned, marketing was not a function at that point. So it was done kind of by people all across the business wanting to put together something interesting back in 2021. 2022, obviously, we wanted to make it bigger, grander, and of course, reach out to the audiences we wanted to serve, employees, HR audiences, leaders, people managers. And it was exciting because I think we had the chance to really establish something new in the sense that everyone in October suddenly talks about mental health because of Mental Health Awareness Day, right? Which is, you know, by the United Nations. But how do we actually bring in the right people in different spheres, right? And not just in business, but also in government / public, as well as the nonprofit spheres, to all lend their credence and expertise to this discourse, right? And really have a huge summit that reaches a lot of people and also serves to educate and destigmatize the conversation. So, you know, we are proud to share that we had a lot of great speakers and most importantly, I think hopefully a great attendee experience as well. We had notable celebrities in Singapore like Adrian Pang, a longtime actor and playwright. We had sports people like Kwa Teng Wen. Of course, we had a number of government representatives as well, which was also great because you see the Singapore government these days, of course, going a bit more into that mental health discourse in parliament. Right? And of course, most importantly, also brought it back to the business, right? Where you would hear from leaders, both CEOs, managing directors, chief of HRs, giving their view about topics like vulnerable leadership, how mental health benefits are great, but how can actually leaders enable the managers under them and the HR teams that work on these benefits to actually push them out to your everyday employee and in everyday discourse. So I think that was something that was really exciting to work on and can't reveal too much, but this year we might be even doing something different on the event.
And maybe if you don't mind sharing, how is the festival impacted? What were the sort of metrics that you're looking at or North Star? And has anything changed since the festival?
Makes sense. So I think, of course, most people might like to measure event marketing by very simple metrics like event attendees, right? And that's great. Obviously, we do need to look at that. But I think more importantly, I look at two things. The attendee experience, right? Obviously, you have something like NPS score, you have qualitative feedback. And we, of course, not to go to the exact numbers, but achieve significantly higher numbers than in our first iteration. And secondly, as well, of course, the importance of communicating to those attendees that would want to have a follow-up in certain ways or another, right? Some could be clients where they're trying to use this event and champion Mendel within the organization. And of course, a number of prospects interested to find out more and even a huge number of it, people who are new to Intellect entirely. And this is literally the first touch point, right? So I think those obviously would form our core pipeline of MQLs, SQLs, and of course, engage clients to bring back to the business impact.
I think it's pretty clear from the event that you talked about a lot of different sort of segments that you have to cover. Obviously, you have the enterprise. Then obviously, you're also trying to get individual users as well to get on the app and engage. And Theo has mentioned in the past about how, you know, it's all connected, actually. Like, it may seem like a lot, but it's all connected, the B2B and also the B2C side of things. So how does that flywheel of B2C and B2B impact your approach when it comes to marketing Intellect as a brand?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, right? Because not many similar enterprise services exist in the HR world with a consumer-facing function, right? If you think about the largest purchases that HR teams make globally, these are like Oracle, SAP, kind of HRMS or talent acquisition programs. These are, you know, very functional, right, and business facing. So I think having a consumer app, firstly, of course, it allows us to further our mission of creating access, but it also helps a lot of, I think, people in the education process, right? Because it's a long discussion, especially in certain businesses where the buyer themselves, or what we call the economic buyer, often needs to convince either regional stakeholders, global stakeholders, local stakeholders, management, and so forth. And no better way than to showcase what the platform and solution looks like, right? So I think that consumer aspect helps really bridge that access, but also, on the other hand, it also uses another route from the employee standpoint. When we have heard from a number of both partners and buyers where they have given feedback that actually, oh, how do you find out about it? Like, my son uses it, my colleague uses it, and my friend uses it, right? So that also helps drive a word-of-mouth loop that creates natural traction in the market.
And how does this sort of, natural attraction and that word of mouth impact the way that you sort of budget or allocate resources between these like business lines that you have or segments that you cover?
I think the way we look at it is more, less so from a budgetary standpoint, but more so from a almost like content or philosophical standpoint, like who do we need to educate with what message, right? So while a significant majority of the budget is very much on the business buyer, but the content itself would want to cater for multiple sources. So how we've been thinking about it is that if you're only catering for the actual buyer, we don't actually show the impact on the end user, right? Which is your average employee and your average consumer out there. So how we're looking at that is essentially a bit of a donut model, right? Where you think about kind of the internal part to the external part. So the smallest, I think, circle for us is essentially your management and leadership targeted content, and then you have your broader HR professionals, and then all employees, and then general population. So that's kind of how we look at whenever we layer content from both a social and written basis.
I think it's an interesting framework and pretty useful if there's anyone listening in who does, especially B2B SaaS marketing, and also does marketing for companies that have several layers of products and target market segments, just like Intellect. Another aspect that I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, given your career, you've done marketing for ride hailing, you've done marketing for e-commerce brands, you've done marketing for a travel platform. How has, you know, marketing mental health solutions or a mental health platform, how does that compare? What makes it unique from the other brands or products that you've worked with?
In a number of my past companies, these are, you know, really established industries, even though, of course, ride hailing itself might be new, but the concept of getting on transport, public transportation is obviously inherent for decades. And obviously, but other industries that work to include travel and consumer goods, right? So these are industries I think of as mostly selling themselves, and the goal of a marketer really is to fight against competition. I think in the mental health space, while of course the thought of competitors do exist, I think it's very much more of building the pie versus carving out the pie, if that makes sense. So building the pie to me is purely about an education game, realizing and acknowledging that people haven't spent time buying and procuring mental health solutions in the past decade, right? If you survey a bunch of HR professionals and leaders, that's not something that is in their top procurement list, right? You have your usual HRMS, HRIS, talent acquisition, employee engagement, employee listening vendors, not so much on mental health. So that's where I think a key play for us has been to look at building education in the market via, as mentioned earlier, kind of the donut model and other frameworks.
And so like for marketing, one thing that I talked about with Theo and something that we featured a lot on our blog about Intellect is the importance of like hyper-localization in terms of not just the language, but even sort of like the service providers that you partner with in different markets. So obviously on the business level, there's that kind of localization. How does that impact the marketing side as well?
That's an interesting question. So localization, of course, is the key question for like nearly any business in Singapore that has regional ambitions, right? Given the intricacies of the region that we operate in. I would say for marketing purposes right now, it has implications, but not as significant as a product. If I may even reframe this thought to how do we communicate our localization and what it means, like kind of the so what to buyers compared to our own localization. What I mean by that is a lot of the buyers are still in Singapore or in, you know, your regional hubs like Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, Hong Kong, that are pretty much interacting with us in the same way. right? English-speaking white collar. But how do we help them to understand difference of localization presence of the platform compared to traditional mental health ecosystem, which is predominantly outsourced, right? So that is, I think, for me, the key localization play, bringing in, as you mentioned, several layers, right? So there's a bit of intricacy. There's the app itself, and then, of course, there are the providers, and both of them form that cultural context that allows a user to feel emotionally safe and psychologically safe. So I think for me, that's the key thing that's always on my mind.
So communicating the localization as a value proposition, as part of the product itself. I wanted to get back to another concept that you mentioned of building out that pie instead of carving it out, right? And usually when you talk about market education, it has a connotation of, oh, now I have to spend a lot, right? To educate the market. But, you know, given the time that we're in now, where there's obviously that pressure to cut burn, be more efficient with spending, and usually marketing is always like one of the most impacted segments in the business. How has your approach to managing this marketing spend evolved over the past few months that you've been with Intellect? And how has it been impacted by, you know, Intellect's unique market and product?
Yeah, great question. I think this has been quite a predominant discourse, not just in, you know, our region, but pretty much globally as well. And exactly as you said, it is tempting in, you know, economic situations which are more challenging to the business to reduce essentially anything that doesn't bring direct economical ROI, right? So essentially, the way I look at things is essentially you create demand and you capture demand. Both need to be done by marketing, right? Sales also captures demand, but marketing usually starts that process. So in traditional thinking, if you want to reduce budget, you decrease creating demand, you increase capturing demand, you get more leads, you get more sales. But that's what I find a very short-term way of thinking, especially in an industry like ours, right? Where creating demand, capturing demand is actually not that far apart. And the mechanisms, if you have the right flows, as to do with your CRM and retargeting processes, is actually quite easy to manage. So personally, I always see the importance of ensuring your creating demand budget is well preserved, right? And if anything, cost challenges, I think I'll look more at the processes that can be changed. So for example, two systems, do we need them right now? For example, companies invest a huge amount into data and attribution, which is a huge part of growth marketing, but really, which are important to a business right now at this time, right? Especially the growth stage. And those are the questions to ask ourselves as marketing leaders. So for me, in short, I think the broad way is very much preserving that building the pie segment of creating demand and also ensuring a very strong tie-in that we can share the business about how that relates to the ROI of the capture demand piece.
You also mentioned about needing to actually communicate sort of the ROI well to the rest of the business. I wanted to ask like a quick follow-up to that. Do you have any sort of advice for other marketers out there, especially those working at growth stage companies, about how to best communicate their initiatives to the rest of the business?
I'll keep this short. Yeah. I think in the B2B world, we love to communicate lead generation, and I do as well, of course, to some extent. But I would generally say, you know, to look to complement that or even redefine that with really the pipeline size that you are driving, the revenue plus one that you are driving as a business, right? So it's all about what are the right incentives for the internal team. So if you incentivize to only be driving lead, you know, you get everything, you just pump ebooks out every day, but that doesn't actually drive sales. That just drives a bunch of like very low interest people that bounce off your sales team right away, right? So how do we actually create the right incentives for our teams to be supporting sales in the way that closes leads?
And we definitely talked a lot about different pieces of advice that you shared, frameworks and heuristics for marketing, especially B2B marketing. But I wanted to shift gears and talk about your own leadership approach. Earlier, you mentioned that one of the things that you focused on in your first week in Intellect was to formalize the team, the marketing team within the company. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about that. What was your approach to actually formalize the team? And then maybe after that, actually ensure that whatever the marketing team is doing aligns with the management direction. And then the third step, finally, actually ensuring that there's some kind of like performance management and everybody's really contributing to those goals from the top.
The big question for a startup is always there is a lot more change that happens, of course, versus your typical government organization or large private company. So the key question for me is always, how do you get the right people into the most important functions And that starts from a first principles where you don't look at a budget and think like, okay, I want to hire X number of people, but more so outline in your marketing plan, what are the jobs to be done, right? So depending on the industry, depending on the stage of the business, typical jobs to be done are always about either communicating a new product, redefining product communications, securing a strong distribution plan, building an account-based marketing strategy. These are typical jobs to be done, right? So I think always start with a jobs to be done list compared to like X roles to Y budget list, right? And that allows you to sort of prep, okay, that's how the broad bucket that the team should look like, and hence where you should be investing in. And of course, the next step to close it is ensuring that there's a L&D cycle, learning development cycle, that ensures the team feels, of course, that they're growing professionally and personally. That can happen through, I always personally love, when I was 30 junior after attending conferences, right? So those are always a great way for your junior staff to start it. And also constantly sharing thought leadership. I share some of my own thoughts about my private digital marketing teaching as well within the team, right? Where suitable. So I think those are the key things to look at.
It's really interesting, especially that part where you actually take some stuff from the other hats that you wear and sort of bring it into the Intellect team. And it does really seem that you're sort of also trying to like run a startup within the startup as the marketing team for Intellect. And earlier, right, you also talked about how your role now in Intellect marketing, mental health care is very different from what you've done in the past. But maybe now you can share with us how your past experiences have influenced the way that you sort of approach marketing at Intellect now.
I'll keep this concise. So my past role working in a large multinational, so it has about, I think, 100 years of history, I think 50,000 employees. The biggest thing that I think shaped my current experience is about a sales focus, right? So quite unlike many other marketers, people might be surprised to hear this, I had a pure revenue goal. There was no other, like, let's say, you know, Frank performed well in team support, or Frank is a team player, or showed them compassion. No, it's just 100% of my increment and bonus is based on revenue, only one thing, right? So that allowed me to always have a very strong outcome focus, I think. And outcome focus is about the inputs to the outcome, right? Meaning we shouldn't look at the outcome and all be like, oh no, we can't reach that sales target. But more so, how can the various teams that are incentivized to reach the outcome do essentially building blocks kind of scenario, right? So these help me to always consider project in terms of marketing projections, spend and revenue outcomes or interim outcomes where they need to happen. So I think that's a big part. And the last piece, I think, from one of my earlier days is that typical growth and experimentation mindset from Uber and Sky is a key piece I'm also trying to carry within Intellect.
And, you know, as I mentioned earlier in introduction, you're also a digital marketing instructor. And that sort of leads me into our next corner, which is the Minute Masterclass. So we actually have an actual instructor and a masterclass question. So it might not even be a hypothetical one since you've already given classes, right? So, you know, if you were to give a masterclass to like marketers and entrepreneurs, specifically on, you know, cost efficiency of like digital marketing initiatives, what would be the one takeaway that you would want the students of this class to take away?
I think the simple takeaway would be know the impact of your sales and marketing's incremental effect to the business, as well as, of course, set up the right measurement procedures and systems to help you get there, right? So without going into the very details, I think lots of marketers, professionals, business leaders over the past years pretty much been put X into Facebook or LinkedIn or other platforms to get Y out of there. But I think the real question is like, how many people would have already bought without seeing your ads? And similarly, how many more people have bought because of things that are untrackable? So those include things like word of mouth, referral, there's a term called dark social as well, which is like sharing a link or product over like WhatsApp or, you know, Telegram and other similar social channels. So those create a positive growth loop around your business, right? So I think always look beyond the impact. You do a lot of retargeting, you may get lots of good ROI, but what does it actually say about your business, right? Is it actually growing at the speed you want it to on an overall basis? Or if you're doing a lot of demand creation, right? How do you know the overall positive growth that you're creating around your business, where essentially the more of a good thing, for example, the more referrals and happy customers you have, the more new customers you have, and so on and so forth, right? So a great way that big and large businesses do it is via a process called MMM or media mix modeling. But of course, for small businesses, a great way just to ensure that all your analytics is set up and you have also a feel in whatever form you utilize to get a bit more information about how someone transports your company.
It sounds like from what you mentioned that you do need to like really coordinate well, communicate well with other teams and other leaders of these teams, you know, like the head of product and head of sales and all these other departments. And on that note, I wanted to get into our rapid fire round corner. So some quick questions, hopefully less, you know, less serious questions than what we've covered just now. But yeah, just need some short and sweet answers. My typical first question is usually to ask what digital technology innovation excites you the most today. But I think I just rather get into the meat of it and ask you, like, what have you used ChatGPT as a marketer? And what are your sort of immediate thoughts on it?
Immediate thoughts. GPT-4 is released. Use it, right? Don't be like a mathematician that is refusing to use a calculator, right? You can. Probably, like, I mean, I can even calculate sums in my head, but should you is the question, right? And of course, how does it supplement your work is important as well.
Well, what's the most interesting thing that you've inputted into ChatGPT so far for you personally?
Without giving away the actual input, what I find very interesting is that ChatGPT knows quite a lot about intellect, right? So whenever I give it prompts without telling it what intellect is, it knows way too much about the company. Let's just put it that way.
All right. And that was just ChatGPT-3, right? That wasn't even...
Yes, that's right. That's before 4.
Right. So pretty interesting stuff. And I guess ChatGPT is part of Intellect's marketing team now. Seems to know a lot. And my next question is, if you would be invited to produce a show on Netflix or an OTT platform, what would the title of the show be? And maybe like a brief sort of description of what it's about.
Oh, that's a nice one. This is, of course, very inspirational. But I think a show I'd like to produce is, without probably having a good copywriting put in the title right now, along the lines of a travel series taking people to uncommon hiking places in Asia. It's very offbeat to what we've spoken today, but I think what's missing out there is everything on Netflix and Disney Plus, so, you know, Western centric, really interesting places, but, you know, the chance of me hiking Glacier National Park or the Alps on like a weekly basis is not there, right? So I think people around this region feel a lot more inspiration to visit their backyard.
Right. And maybe you can ask ChatGPT for some titles. looking back now, what is a skill, or it could be a soft skill or hard skill, that you believe you should have learned back in your time as a student?
This is probably the very standard response. It's finances, I think. I think one thing that I've been very interested in right after graduation, this was, I think, 9 years ago, is essentially around investing. And I think that's always a key part to ensuring that you're financially sound and safe.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and I'm sure many others would. If there's something that you could automate in your job just by wishing for it, I assume ChatGPT is already like, you don't need to wish for that anymore. It's already there. What aspect of your role would that be?
Approval, for sure. You know, you do receive a lot of things to approve, and ChatGPT does help a little, but for approving, not so much. Right, that's more for the ideation or input. So that's the part I would love to automate.
What's your favorite go-to destination in Southeast Asia? Or maybe what's a trip you're most looking forward to taking in the region?
Places I love is always around Central Asia, right? So it's not a destination per se, but a region. It can be Western China, Central Asian countries, or even North Myanmar as well. So I think that's a really, really lovely, beautiful region. Haven't been there for a while, obviously. A bit of a challenge to get into China until recently, and would love to get back there.
Right. Yeah, that's actually the first time somebody has mentioned that region on the show. So interesting answer for sure. What's your favorite activity to de-stress? And yeah, obviously working at Intellect would be great for you to answer this question.
I should say, you know, journaling or talking to my coach. Those are great, but I think those are more systematic ways to de-stress. I would say the much more common thing I do on a daily basis is interact with my child, right? I have a child just below a year, and it's just amazing thing to be stressed. Right. Of course, a family time.
Which is more stressful, the your kid or Intellect?
Cancel the day.
Right. And finally, anything that you've read or taken up recently that you'd like to recommend?
I think, Paulo, interesting question. So, try to read a lot, but while that I do very much encourage people to read marketing material, books, and have my favorite library. One thing that comes to mind now is a book called 4,000 Weeks, right? It's about a guy who has written a ton of time and productivity books in his lifetime. And, you know, and I think he's probably more than senior, and I haven't checked his actual profile. He's now looking at the idea, that whole discussion around, you know, waking up at 5 a.m., all those productivity hacks are not as important as really just how do you envision your life playing out, right? And it's kind of asking you to take a step back, asking you to think about yourself. And I think it was just a great, I think, accompaniment to being in my early to mid-30s, right? Just realizing that, oh, you know, this is the best time I have to really do things from a time and financial perspective. You know, what do I want to do with it? I think that has been something that allowed me to prioritize things, not just in my life, but at work as well, right? It always allows you to take a bit of an overarching aspect and like always think like, what is important today? What is important this week?
And that sort of spirit of figuring out like what is important to you is definitely a theme of this, you know, whole conversation, whether it's for your own life or, you know, marketing. And on that note, thank you so much, Frank, for coming on the show. Definitely great to get another perspective on Intellect as a, you know, a leading mental health care company here in Asia. And also, you know, really excited to see how the festival shapes up this coming year, since you've teased a little bit of how things might be a little bit different this time around. So definitely looking forward to that. And if you want to connect with Frank and tune into his insights and share it on LinkedIn, I will leave his LinkedIn in the podcast description so you can connect. And in the meantime, you know, thanks so much again, Frank, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Paolo. Great conversation. Fun to be here. And of course, for anyone listening, stay tuned for more on Intellect. I'm sure you'll be hearing some things.